Good afternoon. You're listening to the Mother's Justice Show on 1150 AM KKNW. I'm your host, Reverend Walden. It's my joy to be on the air. And that theme song says it all for me today. We who believe in freedom cannot rest till freedom come. This is a heavy, hard-hearted weekend for me coming on today. Of course, I don't live in Buffalo, but we're all connected. They didn't bring us here one slave at a time. They brought us here all connected. And so there is a chain of there's energy that connects us, whether we like that or not. And so it's with gratitude that I'm on the air. And I want to thank all my supporters and everyone who helped keep us on the air. It's with great gratitude that I'm on the air. Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Eric. I hope you had a great weekend.
Yeah, it was Eric, nice. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, hey, bring on my guests, Mr. Rye. We got a lot to talk about here in the next 15 minutes. How you doing, Mr. Rye?
Oh, I'm still the same way you do. I feel very remorseful of what happened in Buffalo. It's the country is just that divided. That's all there is to it. Now this hatred is coming out, this viciousness. And so it's just a sad day in America. I can just imagine Black men and women in the military all around the world, stars and stripes on their shoulders, defending somebody else's freedom. And right now, their freedom, their family's freedom to vote is at risk. And not to mention that we got people on public airways promoting this hatred. And this deranged guy, it's really dangerous.
But he's not deranged. I mean, this is steeped in it. We have to separate mental illness from hatred. Mm-hmm. And this guy is not deranged at all. There's something about deep-seated hatred of us in America that we've got to come to terms with. These people went, 10,000 people would show up at a lynching. I mean, so this is not new. We keep thinking that this is new. We had a reprieve with Clinton. We had a reprieve with Obama. But you had Reagan who started his campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi.
That's right.
Okay, and then you had this other guy who said, make America great again. That's to make America great again without us and other people. I mean, and so we have to not, this is not new. It's just resurgent because the genie was in the bottle and Trump took it off. And they said, come on. But also I blame the Justice Department because this has been going on ever since McVeigh. I mean, Timothy McVeigh, when he bombed the Oklahoma building, he bombed that to try to start a race war. Mm. And so they took out the Panthers. You know, I mean, we're talking about the Panthers offline. So, you know, because you was talking about the Panthers. Yeah. So these are not deranged people. These are people who were raised to believe that we're not human beings and we don't have a right to be here.
And you know what? I couldn't agree with you more because of the fact I think about growing like myself, spending the first 10 years of my life in Shreveport, Louisiana, I saw some atrocities, some disrespect, some things that wouldn't be happening anywhere else. I mean, I can remember my uncles telling me about people, Black soldiers coming back from World War II, waiting at a bus stop and might get attacked by a group of drunk whites and things like this. And they just finished serving the country. That's why I mentioned before about Black folks all around the world right now in Poland and Hungary, getting ready to defend the freedom for Ukraine. At the same time, we don't have the same freedom here. So we really have to do something about this. And the thing about it is that it's, like you said, the genie is out the bottle. I mean, hatred is accepted, it's promoted. I mean, we got down to the point where you had Tucker Carlson saying, what side is this country on? Russia, why are we on Ukraine's side? How come we're not on Russia's side? So that lets you know right there what they're thinking is. So it's totally unacceptable. I'm just hoping that right now they're saying the murderer is still innocent until proven guilty, even though everybody saw him shooting the people. And he went there specifically, as you stated, drove to an all-Black place to eliminate Black people. It's just unfortunate. And, you know, we saw the same thing really in Texas with the Mexican community down there at that Walmart when that guy killed about 27 to 28 people. So I just hope
that. I was listening to the interview of Crosscut with the author of the 1619 Project. And she says that America would not have a democracy without us. And you can tell that right now. These people want to have a theocracy. They want to go, they're not interested in democracy, but we believe that, you know, like you said, we believe these are truths that are evident that all men are created equal. And so we've been the one who fought for democracy in America. And as you're talking about it abroad, they had no democracy, none. They had no democracy. I mean, because really, I mean, even during World War II and all the wars that Black people fought in, all the way back to the Civil War, because Lincoln couldn't win without the Black people. And Biden can't win without the Black people. And they don't have enough strength of courage to be able to stand up to do what they're to do. Because look at the people, they're cowards. I mean, really and truly. I mean, we have fought valiantly in this country, not only like you're talking about around the world, but in this country. You know, I mean, look at the dogs and all the things that people went up against just to register to vote, because people believe that voting, I mean, so they have never cared about the country for a whole. It's only been a few people. And, you know, we outnumber white people coming out of slavery 3-1. That's why they opened up the borders. And the census have always been wrong. It's always been wrong, because at one time the Puerto Ricans was considered Black, and then what is it, in the mid 80s or something like that, or the mid 70s, they came up with Latinos. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be able to take them from the count, see?
Yeah.
I mean, so we don't know how many. So they could have always been a minority for all we know, because they don't tell the truth.
when it comes down to getting the money, a lot of people try to end up changing who they were in the past to be something different so they can benefit from that. But I'm just really hoping that this country wake up. I mean, I just feel awful for Black men and women all around the world. And, you know, here I am with the United States uniform on, and somebody in Japan or Korea or Germany comes and say, "What are you doing over here? They're killing your people in your own state. You need to go back home and do your fighting there." So something has to have to change. This is just intolerable. And we know that more of it's going to happen if the Trump-like people continue to get in office.
Well, but I think the Supreme Court just ruled today something about finance and about the money that they're not going to, money can still stay part of part of the financing of commercials and all of this other stuff. I don't have the correct ruling. I have to look at it when we go to break. But again, I don't think we understand. This is a psychological war. It's been going on 159 years. They've been fighting us 159 years. And we need to wake up and understand that this really is what it is. It's a psychological war. One of the psychological wars is to keep you frightened. You know, so what he did was like a lynching. I mean, it was a public lynching, is what he was. And we should call all these people the KKK and not let them get them all these new names because they behave like the KKK.
You're absolutely right. You know, it reminds me of during Reconstruction, and a lot of the new immigrants coming to this country haven't had the Black history, or they probably won't let them here have it anyway. But there was a gentleman that was a local businessman that passed away, and he was on the front page of the facts last week, Mr. Willie Dunn. And he had a shop, I think, on 19th by the Boys Club. It was famous for making sausage. Anyway, as it turns out, he was a grandnephew of the lieutenant governor of Louisiana, who was the lieutenant governor from 1868 to 1871. So what that shows you is that during that era, we had over 1,000 Black elected and appointed officials. And then the same thing that's happening right now on affirmative action, it came right back. We're repeating history all over again. It's to the point where they ran all the Black folks out of office. They burned them out. They took their
Burned them out. Yeah. Exactly. And then they changed the law someplace. And Wilmington, North Carolina, they had something that happened. The guy, and then they went to Congress and made it harder for people to vote. I mean, they actually do a lot of other stuff. So right there, that Reconstruction time actually let us know what they can do or what they're going to try to do right now. And it's still going on. But because we don't understand history and because we've been programmed to pop culture absolutely does not help you to connect the dots. And so our people are still in the wilderness because they fall in pop culture, and pop culture just takes you on to the next thing right now. Just like, oh, okay, we're done with this. And unless we connect the dots, we'll never be able to get this. I mean, I'd be calling for a national boycott because really we need to take our money out of the system. I mean, really and truly, because every major company that we support today also was on Stand Your Ground laws after Trayvon Martin got killed down in Florida. The only two national country was not companies was Costco and Starbucks. Mm-hmm. All the rest of the countries are companies, Amazon, I mean, Microsoft, they were all part of Stand Your Ground.
Well, it was like even now, I know that during the George Floyd and Black Lives Matter movement, which is still going on, that the employees at Fred Meyer and Safeway could not wear Black Lives Matter paraphernalia, whereas the Starbucks people could. I just thought that's something to mention as well.
Well, yeah, but also these companies are benefiting because they take their profits that we spend, because we the icing on every cake. On all of these cakes, we spend our money and they take their money and support Trump. All of them do. I mean, except for Costco and they going after Starbucks, for union. But Starbucks was not part of Stand Your Ground laws. Mm-hmm. Was not.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those corporations give to both parties, to be honest with you. That's how they do it. So they want to be able to make money no matter who's in power. And right now, even with these shortages and stuff, you know, I'm saying it's a lot of it's contrived, because if you check the profits of corporations, they're going up, they're not going down. The cost for the people and inflation, they want to blame on President Biden. But if the fact, if you look at the corporations and the oil companies and see how their profits are increasing, then you can really determine who the culprits are.
Well, I agree with that. But I know one side, they got the Koch brothers. So every time you buy a paper product, every time you buy napkins, paper cups, anything in America with a paper wrapping on it, you are supporting the Koch brothers. We have a whole list of products that you buy that the Koch brothers own. These are the people who are financing the right. And these are rich people, Murdoch, who own Fox News. All these people are they're financing these people.
Yeah, and just like the owners of Fred Meyer and QFC, the Krogers, and they're out of Georgia. So they have that mentality, and that's why they weren't allowed to wear Black Lives Matter paraphernalia.
But I tell you, Black Lives Matter never went in anywhere and gunned down anybody. Now, they might have had a rally, they might have had a protest and somebody got killed, but they didn't kill anybody. I mean, they did not. Somebody might have shown up. Because if that, so really they can't come after Black Lives Matter anymore because they have murderers who absolutely want to murder people. And this little guy might have thought he was going to be like Kyle, going to get away with it, but I don't think so.
Well, one of the Black Washington, D.C. Capitol police officers said that Black Lives Matter protesters wouldn't have made it to the first step. They'd have been shooting it in. That's been reaffirmed by Donald Trump by saying, can't we just shoot them in the legs? And then the other fiasco he pulled when he used the military to go out to do a photo op holding the Bible upside down in front of that church.
Well, I think we still have to go deeper to understand that this is war. It's psychological war. That's to put fear in people. That's to put fear in people. They come and burn your house down, and burn your schoolhouse down, burn down Black Wall Street. That's a fear tactic. And it's our determination that we will not be turned around. It is our sure determination that we got a right to be here, to breathe this great earth and all of this stuff, as Paul Robeson said. We got a right to be here. And I continue to say that. So
yeah. Anyway, my daughter says we built this joint for free.
That's right.
Because
that's right.
You know, that's why they don't want the history taught to people coming into the country as immigrants. They want to give them any kind of negative things they can put in their mind about Black folks, never sharing, and pretty soon they'll be outlawed. Well, we can't teach Black history any longer. We don't want people to know the contributions were made by Black folks. Over 1,000 inventions. I mean, it's just...
But we also have to understand that immigrants in the beginning was bought as a wedge between us because they always work less. I mean, and that's just the truth. And we never told the truth. A lot of places in North Carolina where Black people had jobs at, when they brought in, when the other people, Latinos came in, people, Mexicans came in, all the college kids in Elizabeth City lost their jobs. But nobody want to tell the truth about what is happening. And then they vote against us. I mean, they vote against us. They don't vote with us. So really and truly, I mean, the narrative of America is to write us out of history. Us and the Native Americans, they want to have another narrative, and it's not us, and it's not Native Americans. And so I'm not wrapping myself up in the immigrants issue as much as I used to, because I go to places here in Seattle and I don't ever see anybody sitting in communion or sitting in any other places but us. But we make everybody rich. And so I'm looking at my own consciousness, and I'm all right with that. But yeah. I know, you know, go ahead, Mr. White.
So I was going to say that the other thing, too, is that it's hard, you know, when you have people have access to offshore dollars. You know, and that's why with the minority business program right now, you can't say everything is equal, because some people who you're competing with come from countries that have airlines, they have countries, they have treasure. And that money, that don't think for one minute, none of that money's not coming over here. I mean, yeah. I'm not hating on them, but I'm just saying, let's make it equal and make sure that we have a federal designation for African descendants of United States enslaved, and have a department in every federal agency that pays no attention to nobody but us, with a budget in each one that they don't have to ask boss for nothing. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's the way you solve that problem, is by having that federal designation for the people that's been here 400 years, died in every war, and dealt with segregation, degradation, and the other kind of obscenities we had to face. It's time for the United States government to have a federal designation for African descendants of the United States enslaved in every federal agency, because enough Black folks have worked in the government or worked in the government, they could easily run one of those departments. So
they're right. That's the answer, right about that. Well, we hope that one thing about it is that I know most politicians don't have courage. I mean, and that's what I've observed here this time. I mean, even sometimes the Black caucus don't always have courage. So we need courageous people right now to do what's necessary for the next generation of Black people and our survival in America. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Ride, for coming on. And your daughter put out a list of all the people who had gotten killed and also their ages. I think she did that. So I'm going to go find that list. I saw it somewhere on Facebook.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, though.
Thank you. All right, you're listening to the Mother's Justice Show on 1150 AM KKNW. I'm your host, Reverend Walden. We'll be right back.
Market Street Shoes is happy to sponsor the Mother's Justice Show in honor of our mother, Jackie Higgins Rosebrook, who spent her life fighting for social justice, and also in honor of all mothers who fight for social justice. Market Street Shoes, fashionable footwear and apparel for life's everyday adventures, in the heart of Ballard since 2006. Visit marketstreetshoes.com.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Mother's Justice Show on 1150 AM KKNW. I'm your host, Reverend Walden. It's my joy to be on the air. So grateful for all the gratitude for people who help keep us on the air. I'm going to bring on my next guest here, my guest here, a great friend of mine. She's been on air many, many times. I met her many years ago in Chicago. So I want to bring on Rashida. How are you doing, Rashida?
I'm doing okay, Harriet. Hope you are.
I'm doing the best I can, and I thank you for saying yes. I know you've been busy down there in Oakland. True transparency, I always let people know when I know people directly and know their story. I've been working with you almost ever since we met in Chicago. Was that a summer of being young?
Hard to remember that far back.
Hey, I guess we've grown to be elders doing this work. Is that right?
I would say so.
Yeah, yes, and you just continue with the work done in Oakland. And so today I just wanted to, I mean, we can talk about a variety of things. Your expression of whatever you want to talk about as it relates to Buffalo, and then California, then, you know, your work there and you work there in Oakland. And also if you wanted to let people know how you got into that work, you know, with the deputy husband and what happened at the with the hands of the Oakland police. So, you know, I just wherever you want to start at.
Yeah, in December of 1993, some people from animal control came to my house. They were, at that time, animal control was operated by the police department. And they claimed that they needed to quarantine my son's dog. Because they needed to check the vaccination because the dog had bitten somebody. They lied about pretty much everything. I found out that there was an audio tape of the incident. It took me 5 years to find out about it and to get a hold of it, at which point I knew that they had lied about everything. And my son had... You know, despite their account of the matter, my son actually had agreed to give them the dog, and all hell broke loose at that point. It was very clear that they were not interested in the dog. That was a pretext, and they had no interest in that. They didn't even bring a Vector van with them to put the dog in. They arrived in a sedan. Mm. So they lied about everything, and the long and short of it was they killed my son, they killed my husband, who was in a wheelchair, African-American, Korean War veteran, internationally known musician, who was a bassist who worked with Odetta, and killed the dog. And an officer was killed in the process as well. And so that is what got me involved in this work. And I was not able to file a lawsuit because there were no independent witnesses. It happened indoors. And all the attorneys had was the account provided by the officers that they could not overcome. Unfortunately, they didn't discover that there was an audio tape. I did. But it was too late by then because it was already 5 years. So that's the long and short of it. And because I couldn't get any relief or justice through the legal system, I got involved politically and started meeting other families who had suffered similar abuses and joined an organization that was working on the issue. And that's how it all started.
Well, I just want to just commend you. Also I want to just offer my condolence, because the one thing about loss, you had a double loss. You know, my son passed away in 2005, and you know, your life is forever changed. You know, it's the death. You know, death takes our breath away. It changes our life forever. And I didn't know that your husband was involved with Odetta. I didn't know that.
He was her bassist for 5 years.
Mm. Wow. I always learn something new when I'm talking to you. How old was your son?
20.
20. Yeah. Wow. Wow. Bless your heart. And I know, I mean, knowing from the walk, believe it, for my son, although, I mean, I tell people we're all in the same club if you bury the child. Know, I mean, at the end of the day, we all as mothers experience that loss, that whether it's a newborn baby at the hospital and the mother didn't get to take the baby home or whatever, it's still the loss that we all, and it's a forever loss, and we learn to live with that. So I just wanted to let you know that I understand the journey, not totally, but also, you know, and your husband and that. So also, I understand your passion for justice, because one of the things that happens is that your life is never the same. You're not going to be in the kitchen cooking cookies the same way. If so, you're going to be cooking cookies a different way. But whatever, your life is forever changed. And so you've done this work now for almost a generation. And that's a long time. You know what I mean? A generation, people sometimes, they call things generation when it's not. A generation is a combination of three decades.
Yeah.
So a generation is 30 years.
Yep. Well, I'm reaching, next year will be the 30th year.
That's right. Because mother started in 90. And I met you in Chicago, in Chicago with Cop Watch people and all the other people there in the Bay Area that was doing police work up, with Cornelius and all those people. And I just want to let my listening audience know that it takes an enormous amount of energy to keep doing something that you're not being paid for, number one, but you come from a passion of love and you want to see the world better. I mean, and so it takes a lot of energy. So I just really want to acknowledge that. And I know that you've been there with the consent decree. Hey, the forever decree there in Oakland.
Well,
but I saw your page the other day that looked like you're going to have some movement with that consent decree.
Yeah, I was on NPR talking about it. The judge just finally signed off on a probationary period of a year. They're calling it a sustainability period,
where
they have to continue to monitor and make sure that there's no backsliding.
Yeah, well, Seattle actually is going to be going through this again, but before George Floyd and all the chop and everything, they were asking to come from under consent decree because the judge had given them a 2-year sustainability, and they were asking to come from under that. So, but now just tell us a little bit about Oakland. You know, how long did it, I mean? What was the main incident that got the DOJ involved?
Well, actually, it wasn't the DOJ. This was a voluntary agreement made between the plaintiff's attorneys and the city of Oakland, and they did it in order to avoid getting the DOJ involved. But it is being monitored and has been monitored by a federal judge, notwithstanding, and a monitor team. So what started it was a class action lawsuit filed by two of our civil rights attorneys, John Burris and Jim Channon, in the early 2000s, based on 120 plaintiffs, all of whom, except for one, were Black. And these plaintiffs all experienced abuse of force, physical force, use of force, excessive force, kidnapping, planting drugs, and you name it, and they did it. And that class action lawsuit resulted in two things. One was a criminal trial for four of the officers, and also the civil case with 19 officers as subject officers. And that is the civil case is what resulted in the settlement agreement. And the settlement agreement was $10 million plus these necessary reforms. That became a condition of the settlement. So that's how we got into the settlement.
Wow. Well, it's been a long journey to get to this place. I mean, you all have gone to the polls. You've gotten something. You had officers who was involved with sex, rape or something. I mean, so it's been a long journey since that time to get to where you are today. And you've been part of every step of that journey. I mean, I want my listeners to know that. You've been part of that. I mean, you also had a couple of police chiefs that y'all had to send packing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of your favorites, Ann Kirkpatrick.
Yes. Yes.
Our police commission got her fired, but of course she filed a wrongful termination lawsuit, which is now in the process of being litigated. And I hope that the city doesn't settle. I hope they bring her to trial, but I have a feeling that they probably will settle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, but she'll probably, So she blamed everybody. She blamed the court monitor. She blamed the police commission. She blamed everybody under the sun except herself, of course.
Yeah, they sent her packing out of Spokane, too.
Yeah. She probably got some money from that, too.
Yeah, you know, you might be right about that, because I think she was fired.
Yeah,
I don't think she stayed. I don't think she's worked her tenure anywhere. I mean, I don't think, because she comes in. I don't know how she got to be a police chief in a way, because her knowledge and understanding of this is just very it's very thin compared to a lot of other police chiefs. So and then so you want to talk a little bit about how you all, I mean, how you got to the Oakland Police Commission, since you're not, it wasn't organized under the settlement agreement. So how did you do that?
No, it wasn't. Well, we, you know, and when I was working with Pueblo, we knew that eventually there would be an exit from the negotiated settlement agreement. It was supposed to happen in 5 years. Of course, it didn't. But we started to think about what was going to happen after the judge went away and everything closed down. How was the city of Oakland going to maintain the reforms? And we realized that the city of Oakland had demonstrated no ability at all to control its police department, which is why we got involved in that class action settlement to begin with, that we believed that the city lacked the political will and the political courage to control its police department. And that the police department essentially acted as an independent governing agency rather than a part of an elected democratic city government. And so we realized that the only way we could ensure any degree of control after the federal judge left the scene would be to create a circumstance in Oakland where we would have an independent ability to control the police department, regardless of the mayor and the city administrator. And that's what we did. So we did the research and realized that the only way to accomplish that was to change the charter of the city. We couldn't do it through an ordinance because it required altering the authority of the police, of the city manager. Because manager was given the authority over every department, which included the police department. And therefore, having an advisory body, which we already had, was not going to be enough, because at the end of the day, the control was still going to be with the city manager. So we needed to change the charter.
Right, I think we'll take a break right now and come right back to listen to the Mother's Justice Show on 11:50 a.m. KKNW. Are you back? We'll take a break right now. On 11:50 a.m. KKNW. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Market Street Shoes is happy to sponsor the Mother's Justice Show in honor of our mother, Jackie Higgins Rosebrook, who spent her life fighting for social justice, and also in honor of all mothers who fight for social justice. Market Street Shoes, fashionable footwear and apparel for life's everyday adventures, in the heart of Ballard since 2006. Visit marketstreetshoes.com.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Mother's Justice Show on 11:50 a.m. KKNW. I'm your host, Reverend Walden. It's always my joy and my pleasure to be on the air with you all today, bringing back my host, bringing back my guest and my friend from Oakland. I come back on in, Rashida. You were talking about how you all was picked up to set up the police commission.
Right. So we had to change the city charter. And in order to do that, only the voters can change the city charter. Kind of like a federal constitution when you're trying to amend it. And so we had to do a ballot measure. And that meant we had to form a coalition. We knew that as a small organization, we were not be able to be able to politically move the city council to get it on the ballot. And we certainly didn't have the money to do a petition. So we knew we had to build a strong coalition, and that's what we did. We got labor unions, we got clergy, we got all kind of grassroots organizations. We got the NAACP, the Latino Task Force, and the Wellstone Democratic Club, and all of the kind of on the ground organizations we could find in Oakland, and built a really strong coalition and got unanimous support to put the ballot measure on for 2016. And we got 83% of the vote. So that established our police commission, which has authority to fire the police chief, which of course they did, as we mentioned. And it has the authority to discipline and fire officers. It has an independent investigative arm. And it has the ability to revise and create new policy.
So it's that, has it been challenged yet by the union? So if you have a right, you know, you have the authority to fire police officers, has that been challenged?
No, it has not.
Okay. That's very good then. But then you have to go back to get a budget, because I think the first time you all got, you got it set up, but then you had, you didn't get a budgetary. I mean, you had, you couldn't advocate for your own budget, could you?
No, well, we got a necessary budget because we made sure that there had to be at least one investigator for every 100 officers. That's locked into the measure.
Okay.
But what we didn't get initially was an inspector general or an independent legal counsel. So we had to go back to the voters in 2020 with another measure that gave the police commission additional powers, including its own inspector general. And the inspector general will basically take over what has been the authority of the court monitor to make sure that the police department does not regress and fall back into its old ways. And we also have independent legal counsel, not connected to the city attorney's office.
Wow. Well, you have some of the same things that we fought for also. I mean, it's kind of structured that same way in a way, because when this consent decree is over, we always have, we have the Office of Inspector General that came out of the setting up the police accountability system. We already had an OPA. We don't have all independent investigators though. And sometimes, you know, the police doesn't always want to put in our recommendation. So you got a little bit stronger. You got a lot more stronger oversight than what we have. We're still working on, because ours is three. Everything is all under this police commission, and ours is not. See, we have the OPAs. It's an independent body. And we have the IG as an independent body, and then you have the CPC as an independent body. So what you all did was combine all of it together then.
Yeah.
We
took it out from under the city administrator. And I think at the end of the day, the question is, you know, do you have enforcement power? Because without it, it's still left up to the political people whether or not to accept what you're recommending. That's what just happened in Berkeley. They put on their ballot a measure that established an executive director over their police commission, but they still don't have independent authority. All they can do is recommend, and it's up to the city council to affirm or the city manager, I'm not sure who, but it's, they don't have the ability to independently enforce what they come up with in terms of policy or discipline.
We don't have that either, because discipline is still measured. It's still handed out by the chief. The OPA and who does the investigation can recommend discipline.
Yeah.
And the chief can adhere to that, or either give something more stringent or do something less than that. And what they still have here is that they can still go to arbitration. that has not been ended. But also, we didn't get a good contract for the people in 2018. The city signed a contract that rolled back a lot of the things that we had asked for, and we put in the ordinance. Now, we got the ordinance, if it was all up to date and we had got a good contract, some of this would be working right now.
Yeah.
But the city, in my experience, has never negotiated hard enough with any unions to get anything for the people.
Well, we haven't either. And that's why we had to get it to the voters and change the charter, because the charter is the rule of law.
Right. Right?
The charter can be enforced by court. And so if they can't violate the charter in their negotiations. The charter trumps everything. So at the end of the day, Harriet, I think what every city is going to have to do is what we did, is go to the ballot and let the voters demand the kind of authority that is meaningful.
Well, and that's what some people I know that just some other cities, I think we've heard something about some city in Tennessee, I don't know which one, has gone to the ballot.
Right.
Because as it stands right now with the rise of fascism and all of this stuff, and a lot of people who believe in fascism or don't believe in democracy or don't want to see everybody else have a fair shake or hide themselves in the police department. The police department is the only place in America, only job that's left in America that you can actually have three harmed. I mean, you could actually have been, three people have died in custody with you, whether it was on the streets or whatever. I mean, and it's only place where somebody can have three deaths and still have a job. If a doctor has multiple people dying, he's going to lose his license. He's going to lose his privilege at the hospital. Police is the only profession that you can kill people, go on a 3 months hiatus, come back, and still have a job.
Yeah, you're right.
It's the only one. It's the only profession.
Yep. They have established themselves as a protected class.
Right. That's right. And the Supreme Court has kind of agreed with them.
I know.
They still have the immunity. I mean, they still get all of that.
So, yep.
And I guess the only way to is to look at getting it in the ballot in some kinds of way. Because we actually, if we had not been able to get the CPC in ordinance, working on police accountability system, the way that the Justice Department, the settlement agreement is that we would go away after the consent decree was over. It would not be no community, no police commission after the DOJ packs up and go home. And our city is going to be left in a worse shape than it was when the DOJ came to town. We had some issues in Seattle, clearly, but now we have a police department in shambles because we don't have enough officers. I mean, and then the crime is escalating. Now, have you all had a lot of officers to leave?
Yes, we have. Yep, we are at the lowest point that we've been in for decades.
Yeah, that's right. That's how Seattle is. I mean, we're way down, and I guess that's their pushback and punishment for the cities that actually want to get police reform or police accountability. I don't know how people who work for the public and the public pay their wages don't think they have no accountability to the public. I mean, that's the thing that I don't understand. None of these officers, no police department in America get paid on federal dollars. Now, the feds might give you a grant to hire, like, you know, 100 officers, but you got to keep those officers hired for the next 3, 4, 5 years. You can't fire it. You can't lay them off if you take the federal grant. And so they might do that. But the next 4 or 5 years is their salary comes from the taxpayers. And so I don't know how we got to this place that people who pay their wages don't have no say in what happens about their job and how they harm people. I mean, that's just outrageous. Yeah.
Yep. That's what we've allowed to emerge over a period of many, many years. And I guess it started in the 90s with the whole, you know, tough on, you know, crime and law and order and all these politicians.
Oh, yeah, it came out of California with Daryl Gates' model.
Yep, you know, us absolutely. And them, absolutely.
You know, us and them, and they became an occupying force. in the communities. Yep. Again, while we were paying them, and they never, all they did was intimidate people and harm people. And so that model is a hard model to crack. I mean, it really is.
Yep.
And a lot of people come be police officers so they can be in charge or be mean to people.
That's
and then
right.
You got some good officers out there. I mean, the officer, the retired officer, lost his life there in Buffalo. If the shooter had not had on all that gear, he would have took him down. But he was one of the victims, and he was trying to, he died trying to save other people. And so you have a lot of good officers, and that's the truth. And then some of us know some of the good officers because you get to be friends with them, and you get to know people as long as you've been doing the work, and that kind of stuff. But I'm really, so how much money now did you guys pay? How much did it cost you all this 20 years now? So do you know the total amount yet?
No, we don't have the total amount yet, but it's probably going to reach almost $50 million because it was over $30 million in 2016. That was the last time.
Who got that money? I mean, can we go get some of it? Me and you, we need some of that money. Who got that money?
Well, it was a combination of the plaintiff's attorneys, the monitor team that reported to the judge, special subject experts. They hired a professor from Stanford to do a deep dive into the traffic stops, looking at the racial disparities in racial stops.
Mm-hmm.
So, they had a lot of special subject experts that they had to come and pay to do reports and make recommendations and review their policy and all that kind of stuff.
Wow. Now, the commissioners, are they paid? Do they have staff? Or are this all volunteer?
They are volunteers, but there is paid staff that supports them.
Okay, so it's still structured like ours then.
Right.
I mean, because we were the first one that got set up in America this way. And so we're all volunteers too. I mean, there's a stipend available for people who are having hardship. And we have a staff and we have budgetary. We have a budget. We also have a budgetary authority. I mean, we get a budget and we can argue for our budget because mm-hmm. we're an independent agency. Are you considered an agency of Oakland City government?
Yeah.
Okay. So are we. We're a city agency.
Yeah.
I tell you, but I think it's almost asinine to ask people to be volunteers on this level. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, agree.
After being there for a long time, I'm the last one that was appointed and I'm still there. And really, I think it calls for burnout. And again, I think these people need to be valued also. $50 million has gone to other people, but the people who absolutely is going to be doing this work here and making sure things are going, I think it's an awful lot to ask for volunteers. I really do.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. We actually tried to get it in, but the city council didn't want to go for it because they said it would establish a precedent for all the other commissions in the city.
But your commission is different because you're part of the city government. The other commission, they're advisory. They're not part of the government. See,
you're right.
Right.
I don't know if we can remedy that without going back to the ballot again, or whether we can. We could maybe try to get it in an ordinance. And I don't know if that would work or not, but we could try.
Well, yeah, I'm just talking about the amount of time and energy, because if you and I
know, I agree.
Paid, if you and I had gotten paid, we'd be on a yacht right now that we own. Hey, if we have some youngins doing this work.
No kidding. Yeah. I understand.
And so it's a lifetime dedication. I really appreciate you. I mean, I understand the work. I mean, I understand the work and what it takes to do this. It took a lot of effort, like you said, a lot of collaboration, bringing people together. And I think eventually we'll have to just eventually do public service announcements all the time about what is good policing. I mean, that might be another way to turn this tide around, is public service announcement.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about that. What did it look like to put it on the television about, at one time we used to have good commercials on there, but now it's all about selling. But really, I think that this is such a bad, this is such a great issue in America, is that we might have to take to the public airway to be able to get some real, some continued resolution. But you all are the winners down there. Hey, you all are the winners. I'm proud of you all. And it took 20 years.
It did indeed. It did indeed. It's just no easy fix.
No. A lot of late night meetings, and I know that for a fact. A lot of people, you know, trying to calm and talk to one another and to be civilized, and what it takes to work in coalition. Well, I just want to say congratulations to you for
hard work. I appreciate it. Thank you, Harriet. Yeah, that means a lot.
Oh, yeah. And we'll see each other again. If whether I used to come to Oakland, or we get you up here, you know, to talk about what's happening down in Oakland. So, like, one way or another, we're going to see each other again soon, okay?
I look forward to it. Thank you, Harriet.
All right. Thank you so much. You've been listening to the Mother's Justice Show on 1150 AM KKNW. I'm your host, Reverend Walden, and I enjoyed today. I hope you did too, and I'll see you next week. Have a great week. Be safe.